We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, it's Espo here to tell you about our friends at DraftKings. It's everybody's favorite tournament of the year. The golfers are in Augusta, Georgia to compete for the coveted jacket. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the action with giving you a shot to land $1 million. Oh, you read that right. $1 million this week. DraftKings is giving you a chance at it for free. It's the top prize when you download and sign up using the promo code TBPN. If you haven't used DraftKings, now is the time. I'm telling you, fun app. You can use it. And now when you get a shot at $1 million, why the hell wouldn't you? It's easy to play. Pick six golfers, stay under the salary cap, and submit your lineup before the tournament tees off Thursday morning. Then sit back and follow the action. Rack up points for pars, birdies, and finishing position and more. The more in the red that your guys are on the leaderboard, the closer you are to scoring some green. Even though you may not be able to hit the course with the pros, DraftKings is giving you a chance to scratch your competitive itch and reign supreme. Easy enough for me to say. Interesting phrase there. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code TBPN, that's TBPN, during sign-up. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at $1 million. That's code TBPN, TBPN, and you can get a free shot at $1 million top prize only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Finds the
tonight's matchup on the solar panel, Espo versus the Solar Fox versus Carmel Thunder.
Hello and welcome everybody to another edition of the Solar Panel. Whether you're watching us live on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, or joining us wherever you get podcasts, we appreciate you, the Flaming Ballers, more than you know. I am your host, Greg Esposito. Espo, ahoy, hoy. Joined, as always, by the Silver Fox, Dave King. Dave, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. How are you guys?
No complaints. Well, there's complaints, but I'm not going to share them. And then the Carmel Thunder.
Just complaining about aches and pains. So, yeah.
Well, stuff at our ages, it's no surprise. So, and then the Carmel Thunder from Down Under is the one, the only. Saul Bookman. Saul, how are you?
As Phil Collins would say, it's just another day in paradise.
By the way, I want to bring up the fact that Saul had Phil his.
Collins? Come on,
you can't don't knock on Phil Collins.
Come on. My mom is actually hard of hearing. She's like she's deaf. She's like 95% deaf. And the other day she swung by. She stopping to visit or whatever. And she was like, "Can you play my favorite song?" And I was like, "What song is that?" And she used to rock it out to like Michael Jackson back in the day, just because of the tones of Michael Jackson's music are like she can vibe with it. She can hear it to a degree. And she wanted me to play In the Air of the Night. And I was like, what? And like for the first, like, I don't mean to be disrespectful, for like the first minute of the song, like she couldn't hear anything. But she could feel the car kind of like hum. And then all of a sudden it was like, do, 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 do. And she's just like, yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
That's why Phil Collins was in my head.
By the way, I want to bring up something that many of you probably are not aware of. But last week, Saul Bookman had a Jordan flu game on this show. The man had such a was in such pain and did not let any of us know. He literally wound up, and I don't know if I'm violating HIPAA laws, and quite frankly, I don't care. The man wound up in the ER right after the show with back problems. That's how much he carried us.
So we're saying
us.
He's got toughness, but he has poor judgment. Well, his back was hurting, and he sat in a chair for a couple of hours doing a podcast.
Let's be clear. When he joined this show, it was obvious he had poor judgment. But we hurt his back. He had to carry us so much in that hour that the back problem got so much worse that he went to the ER. So props to Saul on that. I had to at least bring that up because I didn't even realize how much pain he was in until I texted him. I said, "Hey, can you send me the audio file from the episode?" And he goes, "I'm in the ER." And it was like 30. I'm on my way to the ER. It was like 30 minutes after the show. So please give Saul Bookman a round of applause for his efforts.
Anything for the team. Anything for the team.
It also explains why you were so damn angry last week.
Yeah, I was a little irritable. if you rewind and you go back and you look, that last 15 minutes of the show, I was like the Suns in the fourth quarter against the Clippers. I kind of faded a little bit. Yeah, so,
we'll forgive you for your swears for kids from last week. Now we understand why you owe the kids a lot of money after that. Censoring yourself not high on the list when you're also in traction. So yeah. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Dave's now going to hurt a hip or something just to try to keep up here.
Don't worry. I've already got today's ready to go. I did something to my Achilles. I didn't do anything for the last 3 days. It's not like I went and worked out. I didn't go play basketball or anything. All of a sudden you wake up and you can't walk because you're like, what the hell is going on? Getting old sucks ass, period.
Yeah, it does.
I agree. I had my getting old moment. I now look like a fighter pilot from Top Gun when I go to bed now because I have to
figure out which movie you're a fighter pilot from.
Yeah, I had to. I was trying to pick which one. I have to wear a CPAP now with the tube and everything. Oh, last night was the
Goose.
Yeah.
Let's do it, baby.
So we're all old. I'm fat too, which we've discussed. But so, well, let's get into some Suns because we're baby. 5 minutes into the show and we have not talked about the thing we're here to talk about. What did a big week, for this team? They had a few tests that we had talked about last episode, but where do you feel this team is when it comes to playoffs? Have they proven themselves in your mind after this week that you feel good going into the final stretch and the playoffs coming up?
Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, okay. Actually,
I defer to you.
That was a great segue. I actually am extremely encouraged by these two games, and the reason for that is. And I wrote about this on brightsideofthesun.com. But I'm extremely encouraged by the fact that the young guys showed up in really bright lights. Like the whole team was talking about how these were their biggest games of the year before the games played. And then after the games, they were still saying they were the biggest games of the year. They showed a ton of resiliency, a ton of keeping their focus, staying with the game plan. The Clippers played extremely well on Thursday night. The Jazz played extremely well on Wednesday night. Neither team said they had an off night. Neither team said that that they weren't up for it. In fact, Paul George talked about how this was a huge game for them too. So it's not like just the Suns thought this was important. And it's so nice to see that the Suns are getting other teams' best, other good teams' best. And the Suns are holding the line for it. In fact, DA after Wednesday's game at home, he's like, man, that was so great hearing that home crowd that, you could tell they were holding our backs, that the home crowd was pumping up the team to make sure that they stayed focused and it really helped. And so home court does matter, especially even if there's only 5,000 fans in the stands, it does matter. Mm-hmm. The only time the Suns actually floundered was when they were in the fourth quarter of the second game of a back-to-back. And even Devin Booker, he's like, look, I haven't been in the playoffs before, but what I do know is you don't play back-to-backs. And so that'll be nice, because they did admit that they got tired in that fourth quarter.
I left Thursday night's game feeling very optimistic. I think more optimistic than at any point this season. I just think that this team, you know, Dwayne Rankin was on Pharrell's show the other day, and he made I think the best point that I've heard so far is
Pharrell
is has a show. Yeah, Pharrell. Yeah, what? not the scene.
No, Pharrell on the bench, long time.
Yeah, Pharrell on the bench.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, so you know, he had asked him, you know, does this Suns team have what it takes to get, you know, to the NBA Finals or the Western Conference Finals? And Dwayne said, you know, I don't know if they do. However, there is not a chance you're going to be able to play Phoenix and not play your best game to beat them. Like, that's what Phoenix does. Phoenix will make you execute. Their defense is outstanding, and they will make you work to get that victory. So you're going to have to ball to beat Phoenix. And I think that's something that we couldn't necessarily say so much about even the 7 seconds or less. And the reason why is because the consistency of the defense. The defense has been phenomenal. I don't know about you guys, but I got chills on my – I got chills when I watched D.A.
I don't know what you want. Is this going to go into the Manscaped ad?
Watching D.A. play this week, it was the first time where I was like, there he is. That's the dude. Like, the swagger, the vibe that he was giving off, like he was getting angry in some of those games against the Clippers. He was getting irritated that the refs were calling BS fouls against him. Like, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved every second of it. I was like, that's the DA everybody's been waiting for. You know what I mean? And all the, you know, DA catches a lot of flack. And Dave and I were talking about this pre-show. He catches a lot of flack. Everybody that had anything negative to say about sometimes. Everybody that was saying something about DA negatively this week can go jump off a bridge, because that dude, even the dunk from Kawhi on him, like, people were complaining about the fact that he's soft, he should have fouled him, or he should not even gone up and defended him. Like, no, absolutely not. Like, DA trying to block Kawhi's shot is what you want to see from DA. Like, that's it. So I just thought he was amazing this week. I loved everything he provided, and he really gave a boost to the Suns. And they didn't even play their best game against the Clippers. They couldn't hit a three to save their life, and they went two full quarters
without making a three-pointer.
Crazy.
Two full quarters. No, it's just they just didn't have their legs to make the shots in that second night. And we'll talk about this a little bit later. The bench wasn't helping them out at all when the starters needed some rest. But I was very excited about the DA thing. I still had to argue, although I shouldn't have wasted my time, but I still had to argue with some people in my Twitter mentions that he wasn't dunking enough in his opportunities at the basket. Okay. I'm like, these are the worst games for you to be complaining about anything on that end. 2 points is 2 points. Well, you should be getting a 3 point. Well, you know what? You also don't always get all the points when you go up and you get fouled. So I'd rather just get the guaranteed 2 points. So I thought DA was great. And what's really great is that he is consistently showing up in the biggest games. It's the dumb games. It's the games against lesser teams that he doesn't show up. The big games, he's always there. There's no issue with him showing up on those big games. In fact, Saturday night's game against Washington, I'm more worried about DA not showing up for that one than I am against the Clippers or the Jazz. Right. And that's okay, because the playoffs are what matters.
Yeah.
Look, Aiders are going to eight. We know that. That's just the way that people roll like that with that. It's some people are just going to be irrational when it comes to him and not see the good and only see the bad, even in good games. I think we've done a pretty good job at being balanced with all that.
I have one more point on DA real quick, if I can. There was a couple points, and I think earlier on in the season, and even basically in DA's entire career, even when he got post position, you kind of were still like hesitant to throw the ball down there because, you know, maybe he didn't seal off correctly or his hands were like fumbling or whatever, right? There was a couple times in the last game where DA sealed off position, and there's a difference. You can tell that there's a difference when a dude seals off and is like, give me the damn ball, and seals off like, you can give it to me if you want to. You know what I mean? And DA had position several times, and there was one particular instance where Devin Booker had the ball on the wing and literally was about to get double teamed. DA had post position against, I think it was Pat Bev. And I'm like, dude, give him the ball. Like, what are you doing? And he still threw the ball out. As we move along, that shit's got to stop. There you go. We're dropping money into the bank.
I'm still on the fence. I think that Devin Booker and Chris Paul don't trust DA enough on the catch in the post because he's constantly getting double teamed. I don't quite get it because maybe the Suns have never had a guy like this before. So that's why I don't understand how it's happening. But as for as little as DA gets the ball in the post, he gets double teamed 100% of the time.
Yeah.
He get 100 every time he drops. The reason that Devin Booker and Chris Paul always have that midi open after the pick and roll where they do the snake around and get to the right. The reason that's open every single time is because the big is always dropping for DA.
Yeah.
And the guard always digs down for DA, hoping for the pass that they can rip out of his hands or knock down before it gets to him. I just don't understand that everyone says he's so ineffective at the post in the post. And yet he gets the attention of 2 to 3 guys every single time. And that's why the Suns have the best offensive rating in the history of the franchise this year.
Which is unbelievable when you consider who's been on this franchise and the teams they've had offensively. Perplexed Damage, one of our flaming ballers, donating that $5 to get this comment on the air. He said, after the Jazz game on Jam Session, shout out to the Jam Session guys, I referred to CP3 as Murtaugh, D-Book as Riggs, and DA as Joe Pesci from Lethal Weapon 2. Do you guys agree? This is pulling deep for a reference, and I can appreciate that pulling real deep. But yeah, I definitely could see
the real question is which one of us is Murtaugh, which one of us is Riggs, and which one of us is Pesci? That's the real question.
I feel like Dave has to be Murtaugh because he's the guy that
I want to be
too old for this shit.
You didn't want to go with the race card and make me Murtaugh?
No. And you wouldn't be.
No, Saul's the one with the back issue last week and the random Achilles wake-up issue.
I would absolutely say I'm too old for this.
He's Murtaugh. I'm too old for this shit. Yeah. I'm Riggs, and that just makes you Pesci. And there's nothing.
Oh, now we're going double racist in this. He's going, the Italian guy is Pesci, and the black guy, I see how it is.
Esposito.
Hey, look, there is no way that Dave is prime Mel Gibson action star. All right.
Let's do another Joe Pesci thing and we'll just do the Home Alone cast and you can leave me. Espo, you're Macaulay Culkin and
oh my god,
Saul and I are Pesci and the other dude trying to break in.
Oh god.
To your point, Espo, my bad.
Can I actually share some thoughts on this question? It's
absolutely
been like, I think 14 Espo, minutes you guys have gone on and I haven't had a word on this, but look, this week,
please tell us, Espo.
Okay. I will. Look, I was sitting there at the end of the Jazz game and thinking, you know, this may go the typical Suns way when, you know, you get Devin missing the shot, you get Mitchell hitting the shot there to go into overtime and all that. I was thinking, okay, well, they're going to run out of steam here in overtime. It's been fun in this game, but here we go. It's the same old we always see. Good, but not good enough, right? In that. And then they come out and they kick the door down at the beginning. It was five straight points that they scored to start overtime, and they basically run away with it. They took the Jazz's best punch and they kept going. I think I don't know if I've said this on the show, but I know I've tweeted it. I feel like they're kind of like Homer Simpson in that boxing episode. You guys ever see that where he just takes the fighter's punches, and because he's got this brain condition where he can just take punches and he basically wears the other guy out until he can knock him out, basically.
You mean he rope-a-doped him? Is that what you're saying?
No, like literally all he does is just get the hell beaten out of him because he doesn't feel it, basically. Okay. I feel like that's that's the Suns team. They're like, okay, give me, we'll take your best punches. This may be close in the end, but we're still going to win this against you. I mean, they seem to, the Jazz are everybody's darling, right? The Jazz are the ones that are getting a lot of the hype as, oh, well, they were the unexpected team, but you know, they've got a great chance, right?
I disagree with that.
I feel like they're getting more of it than the Suns
Jazz fans would turn around and say that we're getting more love than they are.
Yeah, well, Jazz fans can kiss my ass for all I care.
That's just saying, for everything we say about the Suns and the national disrespect, Jazz fans feel almost the exact same way about the Jazz.
Bucks fans too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
mean, any smaller than top five market fan base has a right to say that they're not getting enough national love because the national media only care about the top five because that's what gets the clicks.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that was a signature win though, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
On national television, which always helps.
Even though the ESPN headline was about Donnie Mitchell's 40-some points.
That's a lazy intern that's writing headlines that went with the easy click than actually seeing what happened in the full game. I guarantee that's what happened there. But look, to me, that's the signature win because that's the closest I think we've seen in the NBA this season to a playoff game, right? How intense that was, the back and forth, everything. You got the best out of the top two teams going at it there, and the Suns prevailed. And that was not what a lot of people felt. There was I think it was Locked On Bets was like, this is going to be a mini Jazz blowout. That was one of the quotes from their shows, which I don't know what the hell a mini blowout is, but it was not even
a mini
close.
Blowout is probably any win.
They're gonna win by 5 points. It's a mini blowout. Like I don't know what it was, but they obviously were wrong.
Clearly,
but a lot of people were pointing at the Jazz to get that win. The Suns gut it out, win that, and then to your point, guys, I think they played despite not hitting their threes, which obviously is going to hamper any offense.
Second lowest of the season.
They played through three quarters just as good as they did in that Jazz game. They were right there. And then, you know, they run out of gas. And the Clippers are, pardon my language, a bunch of assholes. Like, let's just be frank. The fourth quarter, they are one of those teams that they may not be as good as your team, but they are going to annoy the hell out of you because
and that's what the Suns are actually developing as a reputation of annoying the hell out of the other team too.
I like it when it's my team.
That's what good defensive teams do. They annoy the heck out of you. You know.
Yeah. Did you guys see that Pat Bev has a broken wrist that he's going to miss 3 or 4 weeks for? I wonder if he broke it trying to swing at Chris Paul's brass balls.
Jeez. I don't think he hit those bad
boys. He swung at everything.
You know, Buck Dog in the chat was talking about the Clippers are a terrible matchup for the Suns, and I do agree. If Paul George plays like that, they will be difficult to beat because Paul George is the one that you're not expecting to come through to that degree. Yeah. He was hitting threes that I was
He's gonna make seven out of nine. Man. Threes and some of them falling out of bounds from the defense. You know what? Hat tip.
They would be anybody.
What lost the Suns the game was Rajon Rondo being that unexpected dude who made three threes and had nine assists and stuff. And in games where the Suns will win, it'll be a Suns guy having that unexpectedly really good game.
But I think I said it on this podcast. I don't know. There's been so many times I've talked about basketball, but Rajon Rondo, that's what Rajon Rondo does in big games. Rajon Rondo does that. Like, that's why it was such a genius move to get him over to the Clippers, in my estimation. I feel like that's the thing that might take him over the top if they get far in the Western Conference. Now, the Suns didn't play their very best game. They certainly can shoot better from three. So I think that will neutralize things. I think a Clippers Suns matchup in a 7-game series is going to go 7, without a doubt.
Yeah, oh, I think Rajon Rondo gets them at least one playoff win by himself doing something crazy in a quarter. I think you can pencil that in. I did enjoy after that game people going, oh, is playoff P back? I'm like, is it the playoffs?
No, did, like, playoff P is actually much worse than Thursday night's P.
Well, okay, pandemic P. Yes, but look, right. Look, I just love that. I'm like, no, this is not. When we get to the playoffs, we will see what Paul George does. This was a game in the regular season. You cannot.
If he makes five out of nine threes, and Rajon Rondo doesn't make three of them, the Suns win that game anyway, even though they only made six threes on the whole freaking night. That's how close this series is. So you can't say yes, individual players are bad matchups for Suns players, but entire teams, there's no team that's a really bad matchup for the Suns. Is there any team as a team that's a really bad matchup for the Suns?
Well,
the Nuggets.
Is that so? Who scares? Let's just go into it. Who scares you most in the West?
I mean, outside the obvious of LeBron and AD. Yeah. I think the Nuggets scare the hell out of me.
He's going to make the kind of threes that he was making in the playoffs last year, similar to Paul George on Thursday night. Absolutely, the Lakers. But the rest of the Lakers team doesn't scare me at all. And if those guys each go for 35, the Suns can still win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Denver, Espo, you mentioned Denver. They scare me on a seven-game series because Nikola Jokic is so good in the clutch. Like, he doesn't miss on a clutch shot. This run that Denver's going on, they've got a lot of close wins in it. They have some blowouts too, but they have a lot of close wins in it where Jokic just makes the final shot. And what are the Sambor shuffle or whatever they call it, where he does this weird body move to get the open shot and then he throws it in without even looking at the basket. I mean, that's what I worry about. Is guys just being, yeah, I'm gonna win. I'm gonna make the deciding shot anyway. And the Suns do have two overtime losses to the Nuggets this year, so that would scare me.
And Aaron Gordon is playing like they expected him to. You know, he's gotten a boost of energy, like most guys do when they're getting traded from a bad situation to a good situation. He's playing much better. I just the Nuggets matchup wise are the most fearful team in my eyes, but I'm not so concerned about the Clippers. Like the Nuggets, I feel like the Nuggets have the upper hand in a seven-game series. Whereas with the Clippers and even the Lakers to a degree, I'm like, it could go either way. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, the Nuggets are there for sure. That does scare me. I think you're right, Saul. If they face the Clippers, that's going seven games, and after at least one of them, CP3's leading him and Jay Crowder down the secret tunnels in Staples Center over to the locker room. That's not going to be a pretty series. That's going to be one of those old school. There's going to be some hating on guys in that series. I think the Suns have enough to beat the Clippers in a seven game series, but that'll be a tough one. The Nuggets scare me, and especially depending, you could wind up facing them early, depending on the back half of the West and everything is still.
I think the Suns and the Nuggets. I actually think the Suns and Nuggets are going to finish 2-3, which means they would meet in the second round. If we're lucky, they finish fourth, and they have to get through two rounds before they see the Suns. If both teams win through, you know. So if we're lucky, it's not until the conference finals or somebody else beats them.
And if we're lucky, the Nuggets would finish fourth. Disregard. I was about to say something stupid. Never mind. I was about to say something about if they're lucky, the Lakers will finish fifth, and the Nuggets and the Lakers would have to play each other in the first round.
Oof.
That would be one heck of the series.
That'd be fun. Just get
it'd be fun to watch one of those two get out
of the way. Yeah,
that's the thing. Round. If the Lakers and Nuggets are the ones that scare you the most, you want this to finish where they have each of those teams have the toughest path to want before they meet you. Because if they have to grind it out, that gives you a better chance, you know, hopefully. And we don't know the Lakers. I know they're saying LeBron, AD are getting closer to coming back, but you never know what's going to happen after after injuries that keep you out this long, and there's also the chance they could re-aggravate something. There are so many question marks in the Western Conference.
Here's the piece of the Suns that I think hasn't been explored yet, and I don't know if Monty just won't ever do it or if he's holding out for now, but going small. So people are, God, there's, you know, everyone's got to chew on a bone like constantly. And it used to be trade DA. Now it's, why didn't we sign a third big? Look, man, if you're talking about bringing in a dude who hasn't played in the NBA in 6 years as your difference maker, no, come on. What the Suns need to do is they need to actually explore going small and just giving up the rebounding battle so that they can take more threes than the other team and just play Torrey Craig and Jay Crowder and you know, all the wings all at once and just see what happens in Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges and just go that way. They are not, you know, obviously they're going to get beaten up. You can't do that necessarily against Jokic, but you can certainly do that just as a change of pace in games when DA gets in foul trouble. Look, the key to the playoffs is that DA is available for the playoffs. Once that happens, then it's just a matter of how do you fill in that 10, 15 minutes he's not on the floor.
Look, you're going to be forced to go small because you don't have another big option. Dario isn't big. Dario is the size of the guys you just talked about. And let's talk about this too. How worried are you about the slump that Dario's in? Because I'm starting to think this is the real Dario Saric, and the 8 games in the bubble that got him the contract were the mirage. Because we've seen more of this Dario Saric than we've seen of the guy that was a great backup center, and that concerns me immensely. Dude, with Dario this team got, going into the playoffs.
Dario got, he did not have a good game last game. Period.
No, he's going through a real bad. So somebody just Justin Ramirez in the chat just said, give Sticks a chance. Look, man, the dude walks around like he's on sticks. That's this year he's so like Bambi out there with barely feeling his legs for the first time. Next year he's going to be better if he becomes an NBA player. But really, the dude is not ready for this moment. He's not. Here's one thing I am impressed with, though. The Suns have 4 guys who have never even sniffed playoff games in the NBA. These last 2 games this week have been playoff caliber type games. All the Suns' young guys in their rotation showed up. Mikal Bridges got into foul trouble the first night, so he couldn't really do that. But the second night, he had 20 points. Cam Johnson, when he needed to fill in for Mikal, played really well on Wednesday and then played pretty well again on Thursday. DA and Devin Booker both showed up big. And I think that says a lot for the Suns' chances in the playoffs.
There's a comment in the chat that says from Cordell Cumming saying, if James Jones believed this team was going to be this good, it was an epic failure to draft Sticks, knowing he probably wasn't going to contribute to a championship contender. And I absolutely disagree. I disagree. There's nobody in that 10 range, or I forgot where they picked,
10.
That was available. That would be like a giant contributor outside. Maybe Halliburton. But if you put in Halliburton, that's sacrificing somebody else like Cameron Payne. And I think Cameron Payne has a bigger upside offensively than Halliburton.
I'm with you. And by the way, James Jones, A, has always wanted a championship, but B, has never built a team just about that, because it'd be dumb to say before this season started, I'm building a championship team, so I'm going to draft a guy who can contribute this year. That is so short-sighted. Yeah. That is so short-sighted. You've also got to build for the future, because guess what? At the end of this year, you've got DA and Mikal both extension eligible for probably $30+ million a year, the way the salary cap is going, because it's a percentage of the cap. And then you've also got Chris Paul. You've got to figure out if you're going to bring back, and you've got Devin Booker. You know, that's 4 guys making a ton of money. You need young guys who are going to fill in on their rookie deals and contribute, and with a high ceiling that can be contributors. And while Halliburton's a special case. Let's just talk about him for a second. He's a special case. His agent wasn't sending medical info to any teams but the teams he wanted to be drafted by. That is a regular ploy, happens every year. Some agents do that, and you're foolish if you actually draft the guy anyway, without seeing their medical info. It just, it's a foolish move. Sometimes you get lucky, but it's not really meant to work that way. That's how agents control the draft a little bit when their guy is not wanting to go or wanting to go to a particular place. Sometimes that doesn't work out. Remember when the Suns maneuvered to get Josh Jackson in that same exact way? That doesn't always work out. You don't know how the guy's going to be in the pros. But, you know, Halliburton, would he be a major contributor on this team right now? Potentially, just like Cam Johnson was a year ago.
Look,
yeah. But that doesn't mean the Suns would be any better. Would the Suns be winning more games with Halliburton there instead of Cam Payne in the rotation? He'd be actually taking a few minutes away from Cam Johnson. He'd be taking a few minutes away from other guys. So I actually don't think the Suns would have won more games with Halliburton.
Yeah, you can play the what-if game. I could sit here and say, hey, look at what LaMarcus Aldridge is doing in Brooklyn. Wouldn't that have looked great in as your third big here in Phoenix, or taking some of those Dario minutes? There's a lot of what ifs you can play.
LaMarcus went to Brooklyn because he had a promise of big minutes.
Yeah, I know. My point is, you can sit here and play the what if, but this is the group you're going to have going into the playoffs. So you're not going to change that right now. And if you do, you're adding a fringe guy who hasn't been playing to your mix, and it's not going to be a major impact. I mean, there's Deadman and guys like that you can add, but it's not going to be what shifts the balance of power. The bench, that is what I think is going to be the difference here. I think it's a strength on this team, but Dave, what are your thoughts on the bench as we go in to the final stretch here and the playoffs?
Well, the bench is just like it's been all year. It's a key. It's a key to the Suns being able to win as many games as they can, get the highest seed. And then in the playoffs, a bench is what's going to make a difference. The reason you're talking about Rajon Rondo winning a game or two in the playoffs and being playoff Rondo is that he's never been a number one guy. He's always been a number four, five, six, eight, nine guy. You need guys like that who are going to step up. So the bench has to be able to step up. We need Super Dario back, not Doofus Dario. We need guys like Cam Johnson to actually make the big shots out there. And Cam played really well this week. He's another guy similar to DA in that he doesn't need to fill the stat sheet to actually be a positive contributor on the court because of the defensive rotations and just filling in the gaps that he does. Jay Crowder's another dude. He barely made a shot in those two games, but he was actually really good on defense. And rotations. And it's not always the one-on-one defense that you got to look at. It's the rotations. Does he pop down to tag a guy who's trying to cut to the basket? Is he trying to, you know, do that help defense all the way through? And Cam does that. Jay does that. That's why the Suns are top five in defense right now. They're still top five even after all this time. So those are the guys who really need to step up, and they have to continue to step up. Cam Payne is a huge question mark. I saw you said his offense is better potentially than Halliburton. Yeah, I mean, Cam's got to be able to make half his threes like he's been for the past year. He's got to. He's got to be able to make those diving layups like he did in a couple of times in these last few games. And he's got to make smart decisions. He, you know, his assist to turnover ratio is like 4-1. He's one of the best in the NBA, like CP, and that's why the Suns have low turnovers. You need these guys to really show up to win in the playoffs.
But I mean, they're built for that. I'm just going to say that's what this bench was built to do, is to just play solid, and that's what they've done all year, and I feel like it's a strength. I know a lot of people keep going, well, can they do it? They have proven it outside of Dario. They've proven, and they're deep. Guys come in. If Langston Galloway gets minutes because of injury, illness, whatever it is, he comes in and he performs. Etuan Moore did the same thing. You know, we've seen that with Torrey Craig, who just comes in and slides in and gives you quality defensive minutes and is hitting shots. I think this is a strength that is going to put them in position to win games in the playoffs.
That's the fun thing.
I think we're overthinking this. I think we're overthinking this. Okay. We're seeing regular season mode bench play right now.
Yeah.
Okay. When we get to the playoffs, that rotation shrinks. It always does. It always goes 7, 8, maybe 9 deep. And for that reason, I would like to see Cam Johnson play a little bit more. I just think Cam Johnson gives you far more upside than basically anybody else on the bench that you're going to bring off. And I think he needs to be on the floor a little bit more with even the starters. You know, I feel like the rotation right now, Cam's getting like 15 to 20 minutes and that's it. I'd like to see Cam get up to 25. Yeah. I just feel like the other night against, for instance, the Clippers, I didn't feel like he played enough. And I felt like he should have been in there because he seemed like he had some juice in those legs. And when guys were kind of drifting a little bit, he needed to be in there a little bit more, in my opinion. And, you know, and Mikhail gives you what Mikhail gives you. You know what you're going to get from Mikhail. You know what you're going to get from your big four, okay? Cam Johnson is that other piece that I just absolutely feel like if he's hitting, he's going to find his way into the rotation at some point on a consistent basis, and you need him to step up. Jay Crowder, to me, Cam Johnson and Jay Crowder, the biggest difference is obviously Jay Crowder plays a little bit better defense, but Cam Johnson's offensive upside is far greater than Jay Crowder. And especially when you go 0-for-9 and all of them are threes, Cam Johnson, like Eddie has pointed out, has learned, like, I can go to the hole. I can hit the midi. Like, I can take it all the way to the rim. Like, he gives you a little bit more flexibility, and that's what I appreciate, especially when you get to the playoffs and those threes might not be dropping.
I agree. Cam Johnson should get more minutes in the playoffs. And I tell you what, the great thing about the depth of the guards on the bench is that if Cam Payne doesn't actually step up the first couple of games of the first round or whatever round it is, and he's playing poor the first couple of games, Etuan Moore is your ace in the hole. Monty already played him as a short minutes backup point guard because he's smart enough to run the offense and keep the point five going. So they do have some aces up their sleeves, playing Cam Johnson more minutes and getting Etuan Moore or Langston Galloway out there to make some shots against a small guard opposition would be, you know, is a move that they can make.
Yeah, I agree on the Cam Johnson front. He needs more minutes. It was part of their success in the bubble. They need to figure out how to get him in there because, to your point, Saul, those rotations are going to shrink and you're going to need minutes out of him. Also, potentially, you could wind up going with staggering Devin Booker and CP3 as well. So, you know, there's a lot of different things. But speaking of shrinkage, it's time for our Smooth Baller of the Week. Oh, you got that, Manscaped? You don't got Bush no more. That's what the image is telling
you
right there.
I really thought you were about to try a freestyle for a second. I was like, oh, where are we going with this?
No, I'm not freestyling ever. But the music sounds good. Our Manscaped Smooth Baller of the Week. Don't you forget, you can get Manscaped save 20% using that code FLAMINGBALLERS at manscaped.com. It's FLAMINGBALLERS, the code, 20% off your complete purchase and shipping. Free shipping there. So Smooth Baller of the Week, it's Chris Paul. Three games this week since our last episode, averaging 20.3 points, 7.7 assists, 5.3 rebounds, and 2 steals per game. That is what you call a smooth baller. And you know what? If you don't want to look like, if you don't want the boys looking like Monty Williams in a mask, right? You don't want that. You don't want anything sticking out the bottom there, right? You don't want that. You gotta go with Manscaped. They sent us trimmers. I got to tell you, they sent two of us trimmers. Dave,
yeah,
Dave hasn't gotten his yet, but I'll send him a bottle of Nair. He can dip the boys in, and it should take care of that.
Oh my! Too.
But if you don't want that burning, you don't want that that pain. Manscaped is honestly one of the best products I've ever used downstairs. You can trim up the boys, and you can get it for 20% off. Flaming Ballers. Use the code at manscaped.com, save 20%, get free shipping. And again, not a euphemism, but I am opening the prize closet for you guys. If you send proof of purchase, no, I don't want a picture of the boys. I want a picture of your receipt. You can send that to mailbag at solarpanelpod.com, or you can message us at Suns Solar Panel. You send a picture of that receipt, you will be entered to win something from the prize closet. And I think we may announce what that item is next week. And then the week after, we will probably give you guys a winner on that. So you once guys again,
are make Espo pull a prize out of his little closet.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna pull a big old prize out of my closet for you guys.
That's a little prize.
But Manscaped. All right. Use code FLAMINGBALLERS, save 20%. All right. Back on the rails here, boys. Let's talk a little bit more about our Phoenix Suns. And we got a fun topic here. The Phoenix Mercury this week unveiled new uniforms. Here, if you were watching the show, you can see them. But three different uniforms that they unveiled. A white one that looks like kind of like their original uniforms with a touch of the 90s Suns shorts for it. A really cool, I think it's cool at least, ombre version or a gradient version of a purple and orange jersey with Phoenix on it. And then a cool PHX jersey honoring their fan base that they call the X Factor, a black jersey.
I love the X Factor jerseys. Those are by far my favorite.
My question for you gentlemen is simple. Do the Phoenix Suns or Phoenix Mercury have better uniforms now? Saul, let's start with you.
Mercury.
Okay, well, Mercury. This will be a quick segment.
No, I mean, I love the blend of a little bit of the old and the new. Obviously, with the Valley jerseys, you got a little bit of that sunset vibe to it. So that's the cool part. But honestly, outside of the Valley jerseys, I'm not a fan of what the Suns jerseys look like. And I think the Mercury did a nice job with the whites, the purples, and blending that with the orange and then the blacks independently. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a little different. I'm going to say that the X Factor jersey is my favorite, but then the Suns jerseys are all right behind that. I love the Valley jersey. That'd be number two. And then I love the purples and I love the whites. I don't love the oranges, but so then I would put Mercury's ahead of the oranges. So, but yeah, I'd say the Suns jerseys are three of the top four.
Look, the Valley jersey's number one across the board, but then I actually slot the purple and orange Phoenix Mercury jersey as number two on that list. And the X Factor number three, one of the cool design touches on that X Factor jersey is not only the PHX with it representing the X Factor, which is obviously the Mercury fan base, which they were dubbed that 25 years ago when the franchise started, but then the along the side of that jersey, I don't know if you guys noticed, and Saul, if you want to put the picture back up for those watching, there's actually an X along the side in the design from the side of the jersey to the shorts. The piping actually makes an X on it, which is a really cool little design factor. Mm-hmm. I think it's Valley, then those two Mercury jerseys, and then I think probably the purple Suns, white Mercury, then the white Suns, and that orange Suns jersey is the worst of the bunch. I don't hate the orange Suns jersey,
but it is the worst of this bunch.
Look, I've hated any orange version of the Suns uniform because you look like you're working at Home Depot, first of all, especially that first iteration. Second, it's usually just a neon toxic waste version of orange. It's about as bright as you can get. So if you don't look like you're working at Home Depot, you look like a damn traffic cone. And then they put the little tiny sunburst on the front of this one, which it's like we've been pounding the table for the burst to be back. And then they're like, okay, we're going to kind of give you what you want, but you're really going to have to squint to see it. And that whole thing just, I can't stand the orange uniform. I think the white is a very difficult uniform to look at as well. Purple's always nice because it's a good color, but it's about as bland as you could be outside of the 7 seconds or less uniform. So I think the Mercury actually have a much better set than the Suns do right now. And major props to Nike for creating a whole look for the league as a whole. That is very, very cool. The only thing that I don't like about the Mercury jerseys and a lot of the WNBA jerseys is sponsorship logos now under the main verbiage and stuff. Like the Fry's logo that they have is on the abs now, which I guarantee half the time is going to be half tucked into the jersey, and it's just going to look like going to look
it's
like
just
trash.
Going the NASCAR way. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Well, look, I get it. You gotta make revenue. That's one easy way to do it. But it would be such a clean look if you didn't have that. If you, the Flaming Ballers, want to weigh in, you can do it in the chat if you're watching live, or tweet us at Sun Solar Panel. We want to hear what you think. Saul, did you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to address something real quick. Like, first of all, like, listen, the Phoenix Mercury and the Suns have a great relationship. They're obviously partners. And they help each other out, right? And I think the unveiling of these jerseys is awesome. And if you're going to be in this chat, cool. If you're going to be in this chat and be completely sexist and ignorant and stupid, you can go somewhere else, because I'm not here for it. And like, the Phoenix Mercury and women's basketball in general is fun to watch. And if you haven't opened up your mind enough to watch it enough to understand the beauty of basketball as a whole, like, I'm all for ball. I don't care if it's a woman. I don't care if it's a man. I don't care if it's little kids. Like, I love watching little 8-year-olds play at the YMCA. I don't give a shit. But if you're going to be ignorant and be completely sexist, take your ass somewhere else. You're not a Flaming Baller. You're a loser. Bye.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I'm a girl dad, and the coolest thing coolest things, I won't say the coolest, but one of the coolest things I've experienced is I was playing NBA 2K last year, right? And my daughter was 3 at the time, and the WNBA's in it. So I played a game with the Mercury, and I don't remember who I played. It was probably Las Vegas. And my daughter was sitting there, and she basically was like, oh my gosh, it's girls playing basketball. It's like me on the game. And I was like, yeah, they play. And I was telling her about it, and her eyes just got so big, and it was like, wow, this is amazing. And to me, the impact that the Mercury have had over the last 25 years on women and young girls in this town is huge. It is unlike anything else, and I give a huge shout out to that entire franchise and what they've been able to do. Diana Taurasi, I've said it before, I'll say it again, is the best athlete in Arizona history. You can argue with me on it; it's perfectly fine, but it is.
She got more championships than anybody, all the other teams combined.
Championships, gold medals, MVPs, best ever to play your sport. Like, you can't tell me there's anybody better than that. And she's been here an entire career. Oh, and because she doesn't make enough money in this league, in the off season, she had to play in Russia for a lot of her career too. So she was playing
year
round basketball.
They have to play overseas to make real money so they can come back and play the WNBA season.
And if you've never had a chance to listen to a 30 for 30 with Diana Taurasi playing overseas in Russia and the craziness that has happened over there, like, just take some time and listen and educate yourself on what these women are trying to do just to play ball. And I think we can all appreciate, like, this is a Suns chat, yes. But the reason why we love this chat is because we love basketball more than anything else. Like, that's what this is all about. And that's what this show will always be about, is about Suns and basketball. And we love good ball. And we could also admit, like, if we were playing the Lakers, you know, back in the day and they had Kobe, like, if Kobe dropped 50 on us, we're like, damn, that dude's good. You know what I mean? Like, it just is, because we love ball and we can appreciate it. We might hate him, but still, like, that's just what it is. And we can appreciate ball at every single level, no matter what your gender is. So don't be ignorant. Come straight.
Look, I dropped the mic, but it's on an arm here. But that is a mic drop moment. Yes, I 100% agree. So let's move into the mailbag.
If I could afford it. Yeah.
Hey, so you know what, Dave? I'm, you know, because you haven't talked enough today, I'm just going to – so let's stat me a little bit here, Dave.
Ooh, Dave, stat me.
All right, so we've been wondering, how good is this Suns team? How good is this current iteration of the Suns? They were so bad for so long, it's hard for us to accept just how good this team might be. So I'm going to throw a little bit of knowledge at you guys and see if it sticks. Currently, the Suns' offensive rating, it's the highest offensive rating in their entire franchise history. That's their points per possession, basically. Best offensive rating in entire franchise history. That is still only 7th in the league this year, but it's just barely below excuse me, the offensive rating of the of the Mavericks last year, who set an all-time high for offensive rating in the NBA. There are six teams better than last year's Mavericks on offense, but the Suns themselves are the highest offensive rating this year of any team in the history of an offense-oriented franchise. This team has a history of being great on offense and average on defense. Well, the Suns are ranked fifth on defense. On defense, this is their actually only their best defense points per possession in 5 years. They were actually better on defense in terms of points per possession in 2015-16 when they won only 23 games.
What about
that's because the way the league changed. Yeah. So the defensive rating itself is barely better than when they were 23 and 59 a couple of years ago. That's because the league is so much better on offense. The Suns are fifth in defensive rating across the league this year because everyone's offense has gotten better. But relative to the league, relative defensive rating, the Suns have their best relative defensive rating to the rest of the league in 20 years.
Let me. So, is that a forgive my ignorance? That seems like a flaw. It seems like a flaw in the advanced stats. If there isn't some kind of adjustment for pace of play, those kind of things, so you could better compare.
Teams are just scoring better. It is adjusted for pace of play. That's the crazy part.
Wow.
The crazy part is this is adjusted for pace of play, but teams are figuring out how to score more points per possession. They're getting those step aside threes are the big thing this year. Obviously the step back threes creating space. They're just being more efficient this year than ever before in the history of the game.
Yeah, it's so crazy because the eye test tells you this is probably the best team defense we've ever seen, or at least since the early 80s we've seen this team play, and that the offense probably is one of the slower paced that we've seen, and yet somehow the stats are telling us best offense we've ever seen this team play. And there are sub 500 teams that play better crazy defense.
The Suns, definitely their pace is slow this year at 97 possessions a game, but it's still faster than any of the seven seconds or less Suns.
Perception. That's what this tells you. Perception is everything. Yeah. Right?
It's also because of how the other teams play. And that's the reason why is right. Because, you know, back when 7 seconds or less Suns were, nobody else was running that system. Nobody else was pushing the ball up the court like the Suns were. Now, just about every team is pushing the ball up the court, you know, in a moderately faster fashion, right? And so that will speed up the pace of play overall anyway. And so
absolutely. The pace of play is the highest it's ever been. And that's just – and but even taking pace out of it, this is the best offense the league has ever seen. And the Suns are just kind of being a part of it by having their best offense ever in franchise history.
Perplexed Damage in the chat, one of our flaming ballers, says Steve Nash still overrated. I don't know that I agree with that. Oh, I don't know if that's a joke.
I just went on a tangent a minute ago. Do I need to go on another one? Come on, guys. Perplexed, I love you, man, but no.
Look, I will say that Kevin Johnson is both the most overrated and underrated son of all time in certain ways, but Steve Nash, we're not touching that one. So
no.
time to reach into the mail sack, the Flaming Baller mail sack. You can always send us an email mailbag at solar.
Why isn't it called the ball sack?
Well, because it's a mail bag, so you
okay. No, I keep trying to do the ball sack thing and Espo keeps brushing over it.
Okay.
Or maybe it's trimming over it.
Does everything have to be a Manscaped ball joke? I mean,
okay. Carry on. Sorry, my bad.
I try to keep all that in one segment and make it as uncomfortable as possible instead of spreading it out throughout the show. So let's hop in there. First question coming to us here. Are you at all concerned about our lack of depth at the five if DA gets in foul trouble? I have a hard time believing Dario can handle the West elite bigs. Could be a huge disadvantage for the playoffs. Thanks. Love the show.
I love how it went from Dario being the best big on the team to suddenly he can't hold up. We got to move him to a totally different position.
I don't I don't think that's an issue. I think for everybody that talks about like, oh, what if, you know, Jokic gets DA in foul trouble? Like the way DA's playing, the same question could be flipped around on the other side. Like, what if he gets the other bigs in trouble? Like then everybody has quality depth in the playoffs at the big position for the most part on their front line. Everybody's secondary bench, meh, it's whatever. And the Suns are no different. They'll figure it out. They'll be fine. I don't subscribe to the idea that we need 4,500 big men to back up DA in case he gets in foul trouble. He'll be fine.
No,
I agree.
Yeah.
Plus, you get away with a lot more in the playoffs too. Don't forget about that.
Well, some teams do. We'll see if the Suns are one of those teams that get away with
more. You're so jaded. Yeah, there we go.
Hey, you go through the years and think about it, and you'll come to the same conclusion that I just did.
I forgot all about it because the last 10 years has given me amnesia, so I don't know what you're talking about.
But the Suns, this team starts setting the tone physically. Mm-hmm. So I think this team will get better treatment from the refs during the playoffs than past teams did that were playoff teams for the Suns that did not start setting the tone physically. They tried to finesse you. So I actually think this team is more equipped to get favorable calls in the playoffs than prior ones.
There's a few people in the chat pounding the table about Torrey Craig at center. I feel like that is a break glass in case of emergency. Things have gone really off.
Torrey Craig would be like,
no, Jokic. Thanks. I'm good. Thanks. Yeah. Look,
the Suns switch everything. One of the things that the Suns love to do is switch everything. And they've experimented with DA, I think, has the most. Yeah, I saw this stat the other day. DA by far has the most possessions defended on the wing by a center because the Suns are switching everything this year. And they're putting him on an island to see what happens. But guess what they did? I believe it was against the Jazz. They had him drop a lot where he didn't do the switching. It was a four-guy switch, and then they did the scramble, and they got DA back to on Rudy Gobert. And it worked really well against the Jazz. That's another wrinkle they're holding off for the playoffs is maybe not doing switching on everything. But still, when they are switching, you do end up with guys like Devin Booker guarding the post, and you've got Chris Paul guarding the post because of the switch everything scheme that I think will adjust by playoff time a little bit.
Agreed. Look, you just need Dario to somewhat return to form and things should be fine. I mean, I know I've been one that said, I don't think Dario's the guy we saw in the bubble, but I also don't think he's this guy we saw last game either. He's a guy that's going to be somewhere in between. You just need consistency from him so you can pencil in, you know what you're going to get out of him and what you're going to need.
Also, some people in the chat were talking about, somebody in the chat was talking about, you know, what are you going to do if you play the Lakers and Drummond is just beasting dudes down low. I'm like, have you seen Drummond play on the Lakers? There's a thing about guys playing on bad teams and looking like all-stars and then getting to good teams and completely disappearing. Drummond so far in the early going, I'm like, whoo! That's not the same dude I've been seeing.
Plus Drummond his entire career, people say beasting. Okay, sure. He can put his butt into somebody else's rib cage. That's fine. But you know what? He misses the freaking layup. He shoots 43% at the rim.
Yeah.
DA shoots 70%+ at the rim. I'd rather have the higher percentage guy at the rim. I don't care if he's putting his butt into a guy first. The dude cannot make a layup. That's why you don't want Andre Drummond.
Oh, and if the Lakers completely change your game to where they're just feeding Andre Drummond in the post against the Suns, I think you got a pretty good chance of winning that series. I'm not going to be all that worried if that's their big plan against you, right? Because that means you're effectively shutting down LeBron or AD and that kind of stuff. So I'm not overly concerned at all. Last question in the mailbag from Fabio on Twitter wants to know, what's the best sports movie of all time that isn't basketball? We've talked about plenty of basketball movies on this program, but best movie non-basketball, I'll weigh in here first. I think Bull Durham is one of the best, along with if you're looking for a comedy, you know, Major League, you can't go wrong there too. That's always entertaining. Saul?
Oh man, this is hard. Somebody had asked me that. Somebody had asked us that yesterday, and I responded with Major League, and I think I threw in Rudy as well. But man, I'm a sucker for this stupid ass movie. I'll tell you this, Rocky IV to me. I just love that movie. Oh,
Russian Rocky? Yes.
Yeah. I don't know why. Yes. I'm like, it's so cheesy. If he dies, he dies. Like, okay. Like, there should be no reason why I like that. And the million montages that come along with it, but I do, and I just I vibe with it. I don't know why.
I must like break him. Yeah, remember the Titans from Blackout Suns in the chat. That is also
I'm still a big fan of Bad News Bears too. I can always watch that.
I think there's some cringeworthy moments now when you go back and rewatch it a little bit, but I could see the love for that. Rick Johnson in the chat says A League of Their Own, another good call.
Yeah, that was good.
Buck Dog, Death Race 2000. I'm like,
what is that? That was pretty good. That was a sport. That's for sure.
I've never seen that. I haven't even heard of that.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh, that's real? Awesome. 200 points for the lady crossing the street. There, yeah. They were racing across country, and they get.
I've never heard of that. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Somebody in the chat says Rocky IV ended the Cold War. That's another good reason to like that movie.
Someone put Rocky III, and I got to say that was the worst by far of all of them.
Is that the one with Clubber Lang?
Yeah, yeah.
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 Well, yeah, well,
he's getting him tired.
Hey.
Yeah, that's
I will say that is a fun quote to use whenever somebody asks you for a prediction of things is just pain, especially when you have Cameron Payne on your team. It's fun to do, but basketball, oh God, no, there is actually a lost episode of a podcast that used to be done that Saul was part of that I was bested on, and I was forced to watch basketball, and it was god awful.
Basketball, please. Benchwarmers was good. It was awful. Benchwarmers.
The replacements, Keanu Reeves as what amounted to Jake Plummer. I always enjoyed that one.
That contributed to the resurgence. Everyone knows I will survive because of that movie.
That has one of the greatest quotes in movie history on there. It was like Clifford Franklin. It's like the cold. He's the only one catching it, the only one coming down with it, baby.
I just love the Chicks Take Mars quote. I can't remember the whole thing, but that's Chicks, also it's, a lifer.
What is it? Chicks Take Scars and something lasts forever. I don't remember, but great speech. That's a fun one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's wrap this one up. As always, it's a bumpy landing, but we're going to do it anyways. It is the Solar Panel. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow the show, you can follow it at Sun Solar Panel. If you want to follow Dave, it's at Dave King NBA. The NBA is there because Dave's ego needs it. And then it's at Saul _ Bookman. If you want to follow Saul, the _ there because Saul, the Saul needs time to get to the emergency room while the Bookman's in pain. And you can follow me at Espo on Twitter. So we'll let Saul get on with whatever ailment he has to go get investigated. Now you've been listening to the Solar Panel. We'll talk to you next week.
If you want to experience that ailment, you can just join me on the Total BS podcast here in about 15 minutes. There you go.
We will talk to you next week. Bug.
That is an ailment.
Oh, wait.
Barkley, 20-footer.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show
by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.